Blog Talk Radio.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and liftoff.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the time.
Hey, hello, hello, and welcome. My name is Keith Blakemore Noble. I'm the Confidence Alchemist, and I'm really thrilled to say that I will be launching the Confidence Alchemist radio show right here, right here. It launches on Thursday the 23rd at 7 o'clock UK time. So that's Thursday the 23rd at 7 o'clock UK time. Me with the Confidence Alchemist radio show. And to find a little bit more about it, stick around because I'm thrilled to announce that I'm joined right now by the founder of this wonderful radio network. So please give a big welcome to Mr. Michael Brooks.
Well, thank you, Keith, and that is certainly a great introduction, and I am honored to be here with you tonight. And it's just, I'm just thrilled to be working with you on The Confidence Alchemist, and that premieres next Thursday, as you said. I'm so excited for our audience and for your new developing audience at this show, because I know you're doing wonderful things around the world, and specifically there in the UK. And what I want to do today, Keith, is even though this is kind of your unofficial premiere, leading up to your official premiere next Thursday, is I kind of like to get to know a little bit about you and what you do and kind of have some fun and learn more about Keith. What do you say?
Sounds fantastic. I can't wait to learn more about Keith as well.
Awesome. And that's going to be fun. So we'll learn about Keith together. We can't do that. So I know we'd originally planned, but we're having some problems in getting both of us on Facebook Live. I know you're a little bit of a magician, Keith, and before we get into the business end of it, tell us a little bit about how you got into being a magician and doing card tricks and fun things like that. I think the audience will be really intrigued by that because all of us are always fascinated with magic.
Yeah, card tricks are cool, really awesome things to do, except on radio, unfortunately, they tend not to work.
Exactly.
But we'll figure that out one of these days. How did I get into card tricks? Great question. I got into card tricks because I do hypnosis. Now, there is a link there, believe it or not. I do hypnosis for my work, and I also use that sometimes to do for entertainment on stage and sometimes in the street, so street hypnosis. Here's the problem. If you walk up to somebody in the street and say, hey, do you want to see something really cool? Do you want to be hypnotized? They kind of look at you with that look in their eye that's a cross between fear and, are you mad? And then they sort of back away slowly and run off. So it makes it really hard to get volunteers. So I kind of realized, hey, I need something that's maybe a little bit less scary to start off with. Something that people are comfortable with, they know what to do. What better than cards? Because if somebody comes up to you with a pack of cards, maybe they've spread the cards, they say, hey, do you want to see a trick? Pick a card. We all know what to do. Hey, great, I pick a card. And we love card tricks, right? So when you can do that to approach someone, hey, do you want to see a trick? Pick a card, do a couple of card tricks. You've started to wow them. You've started to connect with them. Then you can go on to, hey, do you want to see something really cool? Have you heard of hypnosis? Wham, and into it because you've got their attention. So I was thinking, all right, I want to do card magic. How can I go about doing card magic and learning it and doing it properly? And I was very, very fortunate to be able to spend a whole day with private tuition from the late Paul Daniels. A couple of years back, I managed to get a whole day of his time. He taught me some great card tricks, and he also taught me the stuff behind magic. So it's not just a case of learn these tricks, it's how you develop the tricks and all the stuff that goes behind it. And that was enormous fun. I thoroughly enjoyed doing that, and I haven't stopped since. So that's how I got into card magic. Because it was a way of stopping people running away when you approach them in the street.
Wow, that's pretty amazing, Keith, and inspiring, too. Now, you must be, with those card tricks and the magic and the things that you're doing, I imagine if you go to parties today, you're kind of the life of the party and the person everyone wants to hear from and kind of the most popular guy in the room. But it really wasn't always that way for you, was it?
It certainly was not. For most of my life, up until about 6 or 7 years ago, for most of my life, I was painfully shy. I mean, really, really shy, terrified of meeting strangers. You talk about being the life and soul at the party. In the past, the chances of me going to a party were very, very, very slim. It would kind of only happen if I knew that I was going to know a lot of the people there and I wasn't going to end up hanging around with complete strangers. If I didn't know most of the people who were going to go, I just wouldn't go to it because I could not bring myself to talk to strangers. As you can imagine, the effect that has on a social life. What social life? Much of socializing is hanging out, meeting new people, meeting strangers, getting to know new people. When you can't do that, life gets pretty lonely. But that was my life for a great many years. And it kind of also had a massive impact on career as well, because although I was doing well in my career, you reach a point where it's not so much what you know as the connections that you make, networking, that get you your next role, your next progress your career. And I just could not network with people. There'd be seminars where you can learn the newest developments in your field. I used to work in IT, so as you can imagine, it's constantly changing. So there'd always be these seminars showing you the latest and greatest stuff. I would love the seminars, but I would avoid going to most of them because you look at the agenda and the first line on that was registration and coffee. And that, just seeing that would cause me to start to panic because I'd be thinking, oh my word, you mean I'm going to be expected to talk with complete strangers? How do you do that? I can't do that. You know what, boss? I can't go to this event because I've got something really important that I have to do in the server room that day. So totally ruined the social life, and it was starting to adversely impact on my career as well. So, yeah, it was not a nice position to be in. Really painfully shy. You just limit your life so much.
Very, very, very interesting, Keith, because I've only known you for a few weeks now, and being shy is the last thing that I would think about you. So what changed, and how did you do it? I think that will be inspiring for our audience.
Yeah.
What gave you that confidence? What gave you that alchemy?
Oh, that nice.
Nice.
I see what you did there, Michael. I see what you did.
Yeah, see what I did there, Keith? So go ahead. I think this is going to be really inspiring and really helpful for the audience. What changed and how did you change it?
Yeah, I changed it by magic. Nah, I didn't really. So what changed was it all came to a head for me 1 year with a Christmas party, of all things. I was a member of an online group. This was just before Facebook really started. But there was an online group I was a member of, people all around the UK, and we would chat most days, most evenings. We'd chat away, typing away on the computer keyboards. It's easy to get to know people from behind the computer screen. Somebody suggested, hey, why don't we all get together for a party in London for Christmas? Let's all get together for a Christmas party. Most of them thought it was a good idea, and I thought, how hard can it be? Because I know these people. I've been chatting away to them online for 6-12 months. How hard can it be to go to the party? Of course, when I got there, it turns out the answer is very hard, because what I didn't realize at the time is there's a massive difference between knowing somebody online talking through the keyboard and actually being in a room with these people and having to speak to them in real time. As soon as I went into the room, I could feel feelings of panic starting to rise. Cut a long story short, I locked myself in the toilets for half an hour, had a full-on panic attack. Once I'd calmed down enough, fled from there and I ran all the way to the train station, which is a good mile or so. And if anybody knows me, I don't run. I'm not built for running. I just don't run. But I ran this mile. So that shows how terrifying it was. Worst of it was I didn't even stop at the cloakroom to pick up my jacket, because that would have meant speaking to someone. So I lost the jacket. It was a really nice jacket as well. But as I was sat in the train was pulling away, I was thinking, oh, I'm safe now. I had that ridiculous thought that, oh, what if somebody from the party seen me go, they're going to be chasing after me to drag me back. Of course they wouldn't. But when you're in that state, you have all these things going on. And I was thinking, right, this is silly. You cannot carry on going through life like this. You've got to change. If you carry on going through life like this, I was saying to myself on the train, how rubbish is life going to continue to be? You've got to do something to change, and you've got to do it now. And as luck would have it, a friend a few days later pretty much dragged me, almost kicking and screaming, to a weekend event, which was all about personal development. I'd never done anything about personal development before, but they dragged me to this event. And I was so impressed that I signed up there and then for the trainings which that company was offering. So it was trainings in NLP, hypnosis, all of these tools. My thought was, hey, if I can learn all of these, I can use those to reprogram myself and upgrade my mind. You can tell I come from an IT background, right? Just the language, they're reprogramming and upgrading. That's what I did. So I learned all of these skills, and I used them to reprogram my own mind to completely conquer the phobia I had about meeting people, to change my whole way of seeing myself so that I became a confident person. And life kind of changed and blossomed from that point.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. From life of the party to from shy to life of the party and doing magic tricks for people. That's really something else, Keith, and certainly shows for other shy people out there that that you can change and that you you can be comfortable around other people and be confident, and that has implications both for your business life and, of course, your personal life as well. So very, very cool. And now you are a confidence coach. You're teaching others to through NLP and the personal development tools that you mentioned. Tell me a little bit about how that's going, and obviously you got into it after that class. That course that you took, but tell me what the biggest challenge is you see for people in confidence, and maybe give us three tips right here and now that people can take to the bank today and use to be a more confident, upbeat person.
Great question. The kind of question I wish I'd had the answer to about 6 or 7 years ago or even further back. It would have made a big difference. You're right. These days, I'm the confidence alchemist. I help people transform their deepest fears and phobias into their greatest strengths. And it's using these tools, using the processes I've built up over the years. I went the whole hog and learned how to do NLP and hypnosis. The good news is you don't have to learn all of that just to become confident. I did it because that's just who I am. I love learning stuff. But you're right, I use these tools, I'm blending them into a thing called Freedom Technology, which I use to help people reprogram their mind. And the biggest challenges that most clients I've worked with, their biggest challenges have been all around the fear that they have, whether it's fear, as in my case, it was fear of speaking to people, or whether it's the fear of performing. I worked with one lady who's a beautiful singer. She's professionally trained at some of the top schools in Paris, but she just could not bring herself to sing in public. We had a chat, worked together for about an hour in Parliament Square in London. And at the end of it, I said to her, hey, you know what? Go on. Why not sing a song right now? And she went ahead and sang a song completely unaccompanied right in the middle of Parliament Square in London with loads of tourists all walking past and stopping and watching and so on. Because she'd got over the emotion around being judged and what other people would say. So I would say that the biggest things to that you can realize, which will start helping you with confidence, is first one is to realize you can always change. Just because you are the way you are now does not mean you will always be that way, because none of us were born lacking in confidence. None of us were born shy. We've learned and grown and developed into the person we are now. We can learn and grow and develop the new attributes that we want. We can learn strength. We can learn to eliminate the harmful emotions, to change the decisions that we made in the past. You know, the decision, I'm not worthy, I'm not good enough, nobody would like me. Those are decisions which we made at some point. We can change those decisions. So that's the first thing, is to realize just because you are the way you are now doesn't mean you have to be that way forever. It is possible to change. When you work with a good coach, they will help you make enormous changes. And even if you do it yourself from self-help books, etc., there is a lot of information there which, when you apply it, will cause you to change. So we can always change. Second tip I would give is, a lot of the time people are worried about what other people are thinking of them, what's everyone else going to think about me, what are they going to say about me. The truth of the matter is, as unpleasant as it sounds, they're not thinking about you. The 99.9% of the time, when you're worried about what other people are thinking about you, they're not thinking about you at all. They've got their own million and one other things that they're thinking about. I was with somebody once who had terrible agoraphobia, a fear of going outside, because they were scared of what people would be saying and that everybody would be looking at them. Managed to get them to come to a restaurant. We were sat in the restaurant. We were in a corner. They had their back to the room, so they couldn't see people. And they were saying to me, oh, everybody's looking at me, they're all judging me, and blah, 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 blah. So I say, okay, without looking around, what's the person at the table behind us wearing? I don't know. Okay. The person to your right, without looking around, what's the person on your right? What food have they got? I don't know. And after a few moments of this, they started to realize, oh, hang on, I'm not looking at any of the stuff they're doing, and they're not looking at what I'm doing either, because they're too busy eating their food or looking at the menu or arguing with their children or whatever it is they're doing. We go through life, we're not really paying attention to that much attention to other people, because we got so much other stuff going on in our mind, which means other people are generally not thinking about you at all. So if you're worried about what are other people going to think, realize chances are they're not going to think about you at all. So it's, I think, the world suddenly becomes a much, much less scary place. And a final tip. Sorry, go on.
No, go ahead. You did a final tip.
Okay.
Then I've got a comment.
All right. And the third thing I would say is, beware of comparing what's going on inside you with what's going on the outside of other people. Just as when you see a swan serenely floating along the surface, if you look under the surface, its feet are paddling away like mad, frantically paddling. You are aware of all the turmoil that's going on inside of you. You can't see that in other people. You just see them appearing to be calm. Does not mean they are calm at all. They have probably got the same sort of stuff going on inside as you have.
You know, and I think especially your second point, actually your second and third, Keith, I come from the political world before I became a coach and a mentor and helping people as well. I come from the political world, and the best politicians clearly had one trait, well, two really. They had a set of core beliefs that they were wedded to, that they believed in, and they were able to articulate those beliefs and not care about the criticism or what everyone else thought of them. Now, I happen, you know, to work for President Ronald Reagan, and I can tell you, you know, in public, you know, he's confident, but it doesn't mean they don't, you know, try to second-guess themselves, you know, on occasion when they're sitting privately or talking, you know, with friends. And you're in the U.K. there, and two of the most competent leaders of all time there were probably Winston Churchill and Maggie Thatcher. And I had an opportunity to meet, you know, the Prime Minister, Margaret Thatcher, several times because she and President Reagan were big-time buddies and close friends, and they got along famously. In fact, she was one of the few people that I ever knew that was able to get away with calling the President of the United States, supposedly the most powerful man in the world, Ronnie, and that's how she would greet.
Wow.
Yeah, she would come up and give him a big hug and call him, Ronnie, it's good to see you, and, you know, and the President of the United States, and he would say, well, Maggie, how are you? It's good to see you again, you know. They were just long-lost friends. But Margaret Thatcher was another one that, you know, had a set of core beliefs and really didn't care about all the criticism. That made her a confident person. But, you know, people that knew the president, President Reagan, you know, better than I did, I was on his staff, but, you know, obviously you don't run into them every single day, you know, said that, you know, there were times where, you know, that where he would be incompetent and he would second guess, you know, some of the things that he was doing. And I'm sure the same thing happened for Maggie and Chloe during World War II. Winston had to, you know, be in the same position. So second guessing yourself or not always, you know, appearing competent, how do you snap out of that mindset? I can tell you how I think some of the politicians did it, but how does a normal person snap out of the second guessing if they have a set of core beliefs and they don't care what anyone thinks?
Great question. So for that, one of the most important things is to realize that you have your core beliefs. Everybody has their own core beliefs. Nobody's core beliefs are wrong. Nobody's core beliefs are right. Everybody's core beliefs are their own core beliefs. And if you had the same core beliefs that somebody else had, you would be doing the same sorts of things as they would. You would believe and act and think in the same sort of way, which also means if somebody else had the same core beliefs that you had, they would think and act in the same way that you do, which means when somebody is disagreeing with what you say or what you do, they could be disagreeing very, very vocally or very strongly. But when they're doing that, it's simply because their beliefs and your core beliefs are different. If you had their core beliefs, you would be thinking, doing, and saying exactly the same thing as they are. So it's nothing personal, basically. It's just a mismatch of core beliefs. Nobody will agree with anybody 100% of the time. Absolutely no two people will ever agree on everything. Similarly, you'll probably find that no two people will disagree on absolutely everything. There are always areas where you may agree. And the thing which I find really, really helps to put things in perspective is to realize if somebody dislikes you, that's okay. You don't like everybody, and that's absolutely fine. There are people you like, people you dislike. And so it will be, there are people who dislike you. Now, see, here's the point. Christ, the Prophet Muhammad, Buddha, they all had people who hated them. And but they still carried on true to their own core beliefs. They didn't let the hatred from those other people put them off. And the way I see it, if it was good enough for those three, yeah, I think that's a good enough rule for you, me, and others to live by. Yes, just because someone disagrees with you doesn't mean anything. You, by sticking to your core beliefs, you are doing what you believe to be true. Would you rather be true to yourself, or would you like to sort of roll over and deny your core beliefs in the vain hope that somebody else might maybe like you a little bit? Because they ain't going to like you, because they'll see that you're the sort of person who's happy to throw away anything you believe in just for a bit of approval. And we can see, you mentioned politicians. There are some politicians who get a very bad name because they seem to do exactly that. They say what they think people want them to say, and they keep chopping and changing their position. They don't get respect. They get quite the reverse. But when you have a politician who sticks firm to their beliefs, yes, you may disagree with them, you may not like their beliefs, but there is still that element of respect in there. You mentioned Maggie Thatcher. There was one MP on the opposite side who she and he would clash like mad in debates in the House of Commons. They fought like mad. They had totally opposing views. However, outside of the debating chamber, they had a lot of respect for each other. They became friends. Anytime she would visit the House of Commons after she stopped being Prime Minister and left Parliament, when she would visit, he would be the first person she would look out. They would go off and have lunch together because they had totally different views. They couldn't agree on anything politically, but they had respect for each other because they knew each other was sticking to their own views, was passionate about their views, and would argue and support their own case. That just shows you can be friends with people.
Absolutely. And in the days of Maggie Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, it was a whole different political environment than it is today. They are much thinner skinned. They don't, you know, if you don't agree with them, I don't want to get into a political discussion here, but if you don't agree with them, you're evil and this and that. It was not that way back in the Thatcher-Reagan era by any stretch of the imagination. And even Maggie and the president would disagree on occasion, not very often, because they were obviously, born of the same cloth, so to speak. But that's not what made them good friends. What made them good friends is that they were good people. And they understood that, you know, that you could, you know, disagree on occasion. And while Maggie and the president did not disagree very often, in fact, they, you know, formed one of the greatest international alliances of all time during that, you know, era and got a lot done. Stuff that I couldn't even tell you, you know, about because it's still classified. But nevertheless, you talk about the member of Parliament and Maggie being good friends but disagreeing like crazy. President Reagan had Chip O'Neill, who was a Speaker of the House of Representatives at that time. And what people didn't know is that those two actually were very close friends. They, you know, disagreed constantly and they would, you know, fight during the day. But Chip would sneak into the White House at 7 p.m. every night after the president and the first lady had dinner and he had dinner, and they would sit there and they would drink Irish whiskey and tell old war stories and just joke, and sometimes they'd tell dirty jokes and things like that, and they'd just sit there for an hour talking and having a good old time. That's actually how we got the tax bill through. Is Chip says, "I don't agree with that, Mr. President, but I love you, so you give me this and this, and you can have your tax bill. It's wrong for the country, but you can have it because I love you, because you're the President of the United States and you're my friend." You do not see that today in the political world, unfortunately. You just don't. But you make a very, very good point, Keith, going back to and how we can relate that to you know, to our audience here, in that you know, you don't have to agree to like someone. You don't have to agree to be their friend. And they're probably not going to worry about the fact that you disagree with them, you know, if you're polite and you're competent and you respect their views and they respect yours. And that gives you some confidence to be more competent and not worry about what they think. You know, it's kind of a, you know, going back to common sense and civility, isn't it, really?
Yeah, well, exactly, and you're absolutely right. You don't have to agree with each other on everything in order to be friends. I mean, I've got many friends with whom we have they and I have very, very different opinions on quite a number of things. We're still friends. We still hang out. We just steer clear of those topics because we know we'll never agree. Doesn't change the fact that we can still be very good friends, even though we disagree on some things.
Oh, absolutely. You know, absolutely. And back in my day, we would go out to dinner with the other side, and we'd sit there and we'd say, "Hey, you're an idiot for believing that." And they'd say, "Nope, you're a moron. And I can't believe you would believe that." And then you sit down and you throw back a beer or two, and you laugh and you tell jokes and you know, talk about sports and your families and things like that, and your friends at the end of the day. That's the way it works. And that's why, you know, under the Reagan administration and the Thatcher administration, you know, you were able to get so much done that probably hasn't happened since because of the whole polarized environment today. And that, doesn't it lead to the fact that those politicians perhaps today are thinner skinned and not as competent as a Maggie Thatcher, a Winston Churchill, or a Ronald Reagan were.
You know, I think you're absolutely right there, because they become thinner skinned because they assume that if people think differently, those people must be stupid and wrong and evil. It's not. It's just
exactly.
different ways of seeing things.
Because
yeah.
when you become a confident person and you believe in your core beliefs, you can respect the other side. In fact, you might even be able to learn something or two from them and reach common ground. And that in and of itself would make you more confident, correct?
Absolutely. When you have the confidence to say, this is what I believe, you believe something completely different, help me to understand how you've come to that position. Because when you're confident, you know your position, why you believe your position, so you're not going to be threatened by listening to why somebody else has a different view. It's not going to threaten your position. People who want to avoid asking and getting into debates tend to do it because they lack confidence in the strength of their own position, and they're worried that by listening to somebody else they might actually end up changing their position, which is really bizarre because hey, let's face it, if you change your position it's because you've now come upon some new evidence which suggests a modification to your position, which surely must be a good thing. But when you've got strength in your position, you can say, well, this is what I believe. Help me understand how you reach your conclusion. I will help you understand how I reached mine. Chances are neither of us will change our positions, but we will end up with a deeper understanding and respect for how each other reached our respective positions, which can only be a good thing. You have a better understanding all around.
Great. And we're running a little long here, Keith, so I want to get in. How can people learn more about you other than your awesome premiere of your radio show, The Confidence Alchemist, premiering next Thursday? Stay tuned for details on that. You'll be able to find more information about that on Keith's website, which he's going to give you in just a second, but also on Facebook.com/CoachOnFireRadio, where you're going to be able to find out about Keith's awesome premiere coming up just this next Thursday. I think this you guys are hearing this. The audience is hearing this on Monday. So, Monday through Thursday. So be sure to tune in because Keith has got so much to share with you, and it will be transformative indeed. Actually, let's say magical. So that's facebook.com/CoachOnFireRadio, where you can find out about Keith and all of our 20-plus posts from around the world delivering transformations and just amazing content that can help you in your life and your business immediately. So, Keith, how can people get a hold of you if they want to work with you or learn more about you?
The quickest and easiest way for them is to go to my website, theconfidencealchemist.com. If you go to theconfidencealchemist.com, you'll find a lot more information about conference. You'll find how to get in touch with me. You'll find details about the radio show. As you say, it's premiering on Thursday the 23rd. But theconfidencealchemist.com, you'll find everything you need to know.
Awesome. Confidencealchemist.com. And Keith, what can our listening audience and the people that are going to be tuning into your show expect in the coming weeks on your show?
They can expect all sorts of, I like your term, a magical transformation. We're going to, some of the shows, I've got some amazing guests lined up for. We're going to have some great chats around the whole thing, around confidence and more. Some of them will be sharing some really inspiring journeys, which show just how you can overcome a lot of significant difficulties and setbacks. And also in some of the shows, I'm going to be, it's going to be just me, and I'm going to be sharing a lot more background and insight into confidence, where it comes from, why we don't have it, tips and steps you can take there and then to start developing and growing your confidence. So in essence, there's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be educational too.
Awesome. I can't wait, Keith. And that's next Thursday at 7 p.m. UK time. So I believe that's 12 p.m. out here in sunny San Diego where I am. And Keith, one of the things I do when I hold retreats and things like that is I like to take my guest surfing, and you said you didn't have a body built for running, but maybe we can do a video with you trying to learn to surf out there and how to surf with a body not built for surfing.
Sounds good to me. Sounds good to me. As long as
there you go.
As long as you keep Greenpeace out of the way, they keep going to roll me back into the water when I'm sunbathing.
There you go. Give you some good. So let's talk a little bit about Keith personally. Getting to know you as a person, we've done that a little bit, talking about how you overcame this incredible shyness to do magic tricks for people and become basically the life of the party and the person you are today, which has helped you not only in your life and your business. I think that was very inspiring for people. But let's get to know you a little bit. I do some magic tricks. Do you have another hobby?
That is a good question. I guess my two other main hobbies would be, one is I do like to read. I've always been a very avid reader, and I particularly love reading science fiction, good science fiction. So I love doing that. Great way to chill and to unwind. And the other thing I like doing is playing musical instruments. I've always been musical. I've played with a lot of different instruments. These days I focus mainly on the keyboard because it's easier and it's much more neighbor friendly as well, because you can have your headphones on. So that's the two ways in which I tend to relax and unwind.
Certainly, Keith, you're invited to any party I ever hold. Magic tricks and the music all in one package. Can't beat that. What's your favorite science fiction book you've read in the last 6 weeks, for those that are fans of science fiction, or the last 6 months, that you might recommend?
That is a tough one, because there's some really good ones out. Right now, the one that I absolutely love, it's the Void trilogy by Peter F. Hamilton. That's a really, really good... It's kind of... really does follow in the mold of the old greats like Isaac Asimov and Arthur C. Clarke, but he brings it up to modern. I would put him on a par with those two, to be honest. So his Void trilogy is amazing, very good.
And you're a native of Scotland, is that correct?
I am indeed.
A native of Scotland, the birthplace of golf. Do you play golf?
I have never played golf. It's never appealed to me.
Okay. No golf. What is your favorite? Are you living in Scotland now, or are you over in London?
I'm up in Scotland at the moment, coming to you live from my home.
Live from Scotland. Very cool. Our first Scottish host live from Scotland. Can't beat that. What's your favorite Scottish delicacy?
It's a toss-up between two. I think I'm going to plump for haggis. I really, really do love haggis. It's very versatile as well. You can use it in a lot of different... basically, you can kind of use it anywhere where you'd use like minced beef. Mm-hmm. It's very versatile.
Mm-hmm. Okay, haggis. There's a Scottish delicacy that I think almost everyone is aware of, whether they tried it or not. So I kind of predicted that that's what you would say. So, because that seems to be the Scottish food that's best known around the world, at least over here in the United States, it is. Mm-hmm. Do you have a guilty indulgence?
A guilty indulgence. Ooh, I love Haagen-Dazs ice cream.
Ah, yes.
Especially the strawberry cheesecake.
Haagen-Dazs ice cream person. She loves ice cream. In fact, she's one of our hosts on the Coach on Fire Radio Network. And when I asked her, she's from South Africa, what her favorite South African delicacy was, she said chocolate ice cream.
Nice.
Yeah. As I said, really? Chocolate ice cream? Then I need to get to know this girl better. And the rest is history there. Haagen-Dazs ice cream, very cool. What else? I think we probably covered this, but other than what we've talked about in terms of performing magic and the keyboards and the reading science fiction, is there one thing that you'd like to share with the audience that most people don't know about Keith?
One thing they don't know about me? Oh, that is a good one, isn't it? That
yeah.
is a good one. Ooh. Oh gosh, now that's that. You know, that has stumped me completely.
Okay.
The only thing that's coming to mind is that I absolutely love doing amateur dramatics, acting in amateur theatre, mm-hmm. which was always mm-hmm. something I'd always wanted to do, but was always far too shy to do it. Now that I've conquered the confidence stuff, you can't get me off. Can't get me off the stage.
Absolutely.
So I love doing
and you
that.
Did such a magical job with that, and I'm doing great, great things for people out there. I think that's going to wrap since we're running a little long here, Keith. So I'm going to turn it back to you. But let me say it's been an honor and a pleasure interviewing you today and learning a little bit more about you. I'm excited about The Confidence Alchemist premiering at 7 p.m. UK time next Thursday. It's going to be an awesome show, and I hope everyone tunes in. And I'm just absolutely thrilled for your first show. It's going to be something that's an amazing, magical experience. And thank you for letting me interview you and being so open and honest, Keith.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you. Thank you so much, Michael. It was great fun. The time has flown by.
It sure has. We've had a good time, haven't we? So what I'm going to do here, Keith, is turn it back to you to wrap. Don't forget The Confidence Alchemist next Thursday at 7 p.m. UK time, 12 p.m. Pacific, 3 p.m. Eastern time. You can find out more about Keith and all of our hosts on the Coach on Fire Radio Network, including details about the premiere of The Confidence Alchemist at facebook.com/CoachOnFireRadio. And at theconfidencealchemist.com, and there you'll also be able to find out how you can work with Keith and all the amazing, magical stuff that he's helping people from around the world be more confident with. So, Keith, it's been an honor. It's been a pleasure. I'm absolutely thrilled to have you on board on the Coach on Fire Radio Network, and I will turn it back to you to wrap and have a absolutely terrific week, everyone. We'll see you on Thursday for The Confidence Alchemist, and be great, everybody.
Thank you so much, Michael. That was Michael Brooks there, the guy who without whom we would have none of this amazing radio station. We would have none of the amazing hosts that we have. And I certainly would not be able to say, don't forget to tune in at 7 p.m. UK time on Thursday, the 23rd of March, where you will have the very first launch episode of me with The Confidence Alchemist. So until then, thank you so much for listening. Take care, look after yourself, and remember that change is always possible. And when you change your mind, you change your life. Bye for now.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Radio.